They completed the short journey from the palace to the cathedral without incident, which might have owed at least a little something to the 150 picked royal guardsmen of the honor guard around the carriage. Those guardsmen offered no protection from the deafening waves of cheers, which seemed to come from every direction, however. Banners in the colors of both Carus and Chisholm waved madly. Spectators leaned out of open windows, cheering and waving, and the street before the carriage's perfectly matched four-horse team was a drift of flower petals, while still more petals sifted down like rainbow-hued snow. Given the wild fervor of the crowds lining the entire route from the palace to the cathedral, Merlin and Sea Hamper's security arrangements seemed comfortably redundant. While Merlin had no doubt that somewhere in that swirling chaos of cheering, whistling, shouting humanity, there had to be quite a few people who were outraged and infuriated by the notion of this marriage and what it represented, none of them were foolish enough or suicidal enough to make their presence known on Caleb's wedding day. Not that he or Sea Hamper intended to lower their guard. At the cathedral, the king and queen were quickly and efficiently ushered to their places in the royal box. Crown Prince Jean and Princess Jeannette were already there, waiting for them, and the Duke of Darkos, in the sky-blue dress tunic and dark blue trousers of a Royal Navy midshipman, had managed to get back to Telesburg in time for the wedding after all. There were three other people in the royal box this day, however. An Adorai Dinis and her sons stood as Caleb and Charlian entered it. Archbishop Erech's widow was more richly, though still somberly, dressed than on the night of her arrival in Telesburg, and her sons seemed less frightened. There were shadows in the boys' eyes, however, shadows put there by their mother's confirmation of how their father had died. Nor were they the only ones who had heard that heart-wrenching tale. At Adorai's own request, Michael Steiner had made the cathedral itself available to her, and it had been crowded to capacity while she described her husband's agonizing execution not simply to her sons, but to the entire kingdom of Carus. Erech Dinis had not been held in universal affection by Carisians, yet as they learned how he had died and what his final words had been, many of his harshest critics had found themselves echoing their new archbishop's prayers for Dinis's soul. And several members of the Carisian clergy, whose support for their new archbishop and the newborn Church of Carus had been at best tepid, had found themselves reconsidering their positions in the wake of the atrocity visited upon their old archbishop. But the atmosphere in Telesburg Cathedral was very different this day. As Caleb and Charlian appeared at the front of the royal box, a torrent of cheers overpowered the rich-voiced organ and the choir. The mighty structure seemed to quiver on its foundation, and the tumult redoubled when the king and queen raised their hands in acknowledgement of the thunderous greeting. It took quite a while for the cheering to subside. Then, finally, when the packed pews were calm once again, the organ launched into a soaring prelude which had been composed specifically for this wedding. The cathedral doors swung wide, and Archbishop Michael Steiner and the assembled bishops of the Church of Carus entered through a storm of music. If Steiner was troubled in the least by memories of what had almost happened to him in this cathedral, neither his expression nor his body language so much as hinted at it. His golden crown flashed in the stained glass-filtered sunlight, the rubies glowing like small red suns in their own right. The richly embroidered and adorned robes of his high office, suitably modified by Owl, whether anyone knew it or not, gleamed with their own thread of gold and silver, their own pearls and gems. The other bishop's vestments were almost as richly embroidered and adorned as his, but as bishops visiting in another's cathedral, they wore their traditional priest caps rather than their own coronets. There was, however, an enormous difference between their normal priest caps and the jeweled and magnificently embroidered ones they wore today. The choir's superb voices rose as the clerics processed down the cathedral's central aisle behind the scepter-bearers, the candle-bearers, and the thurifers. Despite Merlin's soul-deep hatred for the religion Langhorne and Bedard had foisted upon the inhabitants of Safehold, even he was forced to acknowledge the sheer beauty and majesty of its pageantry and liturgy as he watched Stainer still reaching out to touch children's heads in brief blessing as he passed. And the fact that all of these people truly believe in what they've been taught is part of it, he thought. There's power in faith, even when that faith is being used and abused. And I can't believe God doesn't listen to these people, however they may have been lied to. All of this faith, all of this belief, surely he has to recognize its strength, its passion. How could he condemn anyone for worshiping him in the only way they've ever been taught?